Blog Talk Radio.
Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And after a short little vacation, we are back to a wet, muggy, awful, icky, blacky Oregon normal.
That's why I feel so wet. I just feel like I'm soggy.
You've been outside, haven't you?
No, I haven't been outside. It's soggy in here. I haven't been outside at all. Of course, I haven't turned the heat on today either to try to dry things out, so who knows what that is.
Well, as anybody that's lived on the West Coast will contest that one thing we're famous for is lots of green, and the reason why there's lots of green is because there's lots of wet. And today we are making Oregon green again.
Well, we certainly are. Certainly are. I guess we're going to do it the whole weekend, too,
yeah.
From what I understand. That's fine, though. I don't know. Of course, I was going to say our weather down here, believe it or not, it's considerably different than yours up there in Eugene, a whole 20 miles away. But we have a heck of a lot less rain and warmer temperatures than you do, interestingly enough.
Well,
for some reason, I think.
Well, I think you're on the other side of the hills, which makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah. That's the story of my life. I've always been on the other side of the hill or the other side of the tracks, one of the other. Anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, we are here on a different day, mainly because I got a different job, which I'm still wondering if it's a good idea or not, considering how much my back hurts. And we are also, besides glad to be back, I'm very glad to still have Cliff around after his recent little assignment, which was to stay alive.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I am absolutely, absolutely impressed I've got to think of the name. What's the name of that hospital?
Riverbend.
Riverbend and something cardiovascular. But they perform miracles. No doubt in my mind that they perform miracles.
You want to share what happened?
I went in there and I was feeling down and out, so to speak, and listless. And my cardiologist showed me pictures and told me that I had no blood circulating, that three of the main valves were, not valves, but arteries in my heart were, one of them was totally blocked, another one was 10% working, and the other one was 20% working. So out of 300%, I had 30% that actually worked. So that's only 10% of my heart was actually getting blood anywhere. And informed me that I needed to go into the hospital instantly. So by the end of the week, I was there and quadruple bypass. And just as soon as that was over, I guess I had a stroke. One of the blood vessels in my neck was just blocked. And so I was on the right. Well, the stroke was felt on the right hand side. I guess if that's the case, and it's the left hand side that's blocked, I don't know which. Something like that. Anyway, something goes backwards. But so I consequently had another doctor. My doctor that did the bypass, he got through with it. Now as I'm sort of piecing this together because I wasn't awake, but it seems like when I got through with that, he immediately took off and went on vacation and left me there. Huh?
He was concerned. Oh, yeah. Well, passed him up. I'm going on vacation. See you later.
Right. So I got a different doctor, Dr. Hauck, that took care of this, put a stent in my neck. Huh?
Hauck or Hauck?
Hauck.
Oh, because there's Dr. Hauck on that TV thing. They would classify you dying and then find out that you actually swallowed a toothpick.
Yeah, right.
Anyways.
No, it's H-A-U-K, Hauck. Really nice, nice guy. He's some other, I don't know where he's from, but he's not from here. But he's a really nice guy and did a good job of it. And so when I woke up, I couldn't move on the right side of my body. I couldn't talk. I couldn't do any of this stuff. That it was just like a stroke. And that didn't make me happy, let me tell you. But I was determined that I was not going to succumb to that. So now I'm, what is this, later? I keep forgetting it is only 2 months later. I went in on September 24th, August 24th. So September 24th and October 24th will be 2 months. So.
Yeah, they split your rib cage, put a titanium bar in there, I think.
Well, they cut you in half and open it up and do their thing, and then they put you back together with stainless steel wires to hold you together until you heal. And I don't know if I have yet or not, but what really bothers me is it seems like such a long time ago. And it's been less than 2 months. And so I keep expecting everything to be better now. And it's not supposed to be better. It's supposed to take much longer than that. Take at least 3 months to feel better, and then 6 months to a year to actually heal. So I guess I've pushed it pretty hard. I can walk, I can talk, I can all that kind of stuff. So I'm real pleased with the progress that I've made. Everybody at the hospital and in the nursing home when I was there for a while was real impressed with the progress. However, I came home and I've been sitting around for a week now. Now I've got to get out and do some walking, some exercise and such.
Now, folks, I've been teasing Cliff because right after his surgery, when he had that stroke, he had paralysis in his right hand. He couldn't move anything.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they wanted him to do was to wiggle his fingers. And they kind of had the TV stuck on the news channel. And what I was teasing him about is that, amazingly, one finger in particular started moving a lot faster than the other ones. And I think that was whenever Obama came on and you got your finger exercise.
Well, the biggest thing about exercising that hand is it was my right hand. I eat with my right hand, folks. That has got to be fixed, period. This, it can't be bad. So that was another thing. Of course, it was, I waited until I spent two weeks in the emergency room, and while I was there, I didn't want to eat. It was, food just didn't even, the idea of it didn't. And I tried testing it. It's horrible. Except that I, later on, a couple weeks later when I was getting better, I realized, actually, that hospital has very good food. It really is.
Yeah, they're not a hospital. The food is not bad taste to it.
Yeah. Well, this they really. Now, then it came to the nursing home, and it wasn't nearly as good. But now I'm home, and it's good again. So, no problem. Anyway.
When you consider that 10, 20 years ago, a major surgery like this, you'd be lying in the hospital for at least a month.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Out. And in fact, speaking of miracles, my boss had a burst appendix last Monday.
Mm.
He had to be rushed to the hospital. And they went ahead and poked about 5 holes in his body laparoscopically. And 2 days later, he's back to work.
It's amazing. It's absolutely, totally amazing. I mean, if I hadn't had the stroke, I would have been out of the emergency room in a week and into the regular hospital. And I would have only spent like 2 weeks in the hospital. But as it was with the stroke and everything, I spent closer to 4 weeks there. And then I came to a nursing home and spent a few weeks there. And I'm not complaining, mind you. I need to make that known. But the nursing home, physical therapy, those girls just beat you to death.
They do not go home stressed.
No, they don't.
The frustration that a physical therapist has, they take it out on you.
Oh, God. So
Hi, friend.
Every muscle in my body ached. So that's why I've been sitting around doing nothing for a week, but that hasn't helped, unfortunately. So I've got to get out and get some exercise again.
Well, I'm glad you're better, and not just because you're my friend and everything, but I did the last couple shows monologue. Thank goodness that I've had some callers call in, which, by the way, if anybody would like to call in, 646-721-9887, let's do it, remember the phone number. If putting together a talk show, folks, whether on the internet or like Cliff's experience, if you've got decades of terrestrial radio experience, there's a lot of preparation to it, and you just don't really realize. You know, you listen to your favorite talk show host, you've gone for 3 hours, you don't realize you've spent over 3 hours preparing for that show.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing a show by yourself without a co-host, and you're trying to do the whole hour, and especially if you only get one caller, if you're lucky.
Yeah, that's rough. It is a challenge. Yeah. Yeah, I've been very fortunate in the times that I've been on the air, terrestrial. I can usually make people mad enough to call. So I don't very often sit there and do it all by myself.
Yeah, but if you get mad today, 646-721-9887, let Cliff have it. He'd love
it. I'd love to discuss. Cuss and discuss, let me tell you. And we've got lots of things we can cuss and discuss about. Are you aware of the fact that our president is proposing a national sales tax?
What?
Yeah, that's right. Our president is proposing a national sales tax.
Okay. Now, I'll go along with the national sales tax if he does it the way Jesse Ventura suggested it.
How's that?
Get rid of the federal income tax and have a national sales tax. Now, Jesse's argument for this is that under the current system, the government gets your money before you do.
Oh, yeah.
Under a national sales tax system, the government gets their money after you do. So if times are tough, they're not getting as much money. But I don't think that's what they're thinking about. I think they're thinking more of a value-added tax, which is the tax on top of everything else.
That's what they're talking about, is a value-added tax. However, he does mention that he would remove the income tax, and you can't have both. 50 cents. Make sure you're sitting down.
Okay.
He wants it to be 23%.
What?
23%. It boggles the mind. It really does. It boggles the mind.
People think that we're all wealthy. I mean, it's bad enough in 2014 we're going to have to lose our tax refund to health care.
Yeah.
And now he wants to... Oh, God.
I found that it's totally... I just can't believe it myself. It would eliminate income taxes. All taxes would be collected by retail businesses as they sell the goods and services. There'd be no tax forms to fill out. That's kind of neat. Do you realize that there are 832 tax forms at the moment? Those would all be eliminated. And the IRS could handle other things. I'm sure they wouldn't fire you. But it's 23%.
Well, the IRS is going to be handling all those, making sure everybody has insurance and finding them on that. So that's what their good job's going to be. But I'm also, if he does that, are we going to lose our interest deduction on our mortgages?
I think that's another subject entirely. This business of mortgages, they may be totally out of reach at that point. I don't even know if we're going to have mortgages or something. This whole house buying and selling Fannie. It's just insane. And we've got them all back again with Fannie and Freddie, which, what have we accomplished? I don't think we've accomplished anything.
Well, probably not. But speaking of politics, that might get a kick out of locally here. We got, well, let me put it this way. For people that don't live in Oregon, don't follow Oregon politics, Oregon is kind of a, it prides itself on being a green state. You know, we came up with, I think the bottle bill is one of our ideas, and, you know, we're green because of the color of everything around. We recycle a lot of things, and this year we are recycling our candidates. We've got candidates from way back when, Dick Atiyah, Gary Rust, going for county commissioner, and for governor, we got, Kulongoski.
He's our governor now. It's Upper, the one that's trying to...
That's right, see? Yeah. Rain Park. Yeah, he was a two-term governor before Ted Taxson Gallatin, the one that we currently have, and he's running again against some, I don't know what sports his competitor is, Dudley. And so anyways, we got, instead of having new candidates come in and try out, we got the old ones that are trying to get back into office. And the thing I get it really kick out of Kitzhomer is whenever anybody touts in their ads, children are our future. We need to invest in education and invest in our schools, because we're investing in our schools, we're investing in our children, and if we invest in our children, that will be more of an educated force, and therefore will be more jobs. Yeah, and you're expecting...
We've been investing in our children for like 6 years, and we still have a higher than 50% dropout rate.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, okay, fine. You invest in your children, invest in schools. There's not going to be any businesses here left for them to go apply to.
That's true.
So they'll all be educated and all go to Idaho, because Idaho is more business friendly, and we've already had a bunch of businesses that have relocated. But it's just like when they were saying with Measure 6667 here, they were doing the same old thing. It's for our schools. It's for the children that give us study funding. Well, people who have not been in Oregon here for more than 3 years forget that that's the play, that the game that they like to play. So they went ahead and enacted Measure 6667, which is supposed to be the fund all of everything. The problem is, it didn't work. And the reason why it didn't work is because they were going on the average tax base. Well, there are so many jobs that are lost in this last year and so many businesses that have left. There's not enough people here to generate that tax revenue that they were hoping for.
Well, that, and when you start adding taxes, people pay less. They don't pay.
Exactly. I saw a thing on the news the other day where... in Lane County, the number of people that are 4 years behind on their property taxes has increased dramatically.
Oh, yeah. And the idea of buying properties for past taxes is kind of going to go by the board, too, because everybody's going to be selling it that way.
Well, yeah, we're trying not to. We're still scrounging to... I'm sure.
Now, I have to ask, and this is kind of personal, but did you refinance your house? Did you get a different mortgage and lower payments?
I refinanced a couple of years ago. I was not eligible this year.
You have to be eligible?
Well, your job history, for one thing, and the type of job that I was doing at the time, which was an over-the-road truck driver, you're paid by the mile. And even though the company will advertise, you know, you'll make $35,000 to $40,000 a year starting, they refuse to tell the bank what my average annual income is estimated to be. They wouldn't even get involved in it.
Ah, I see.
You know, my loan officer was pulling his hair out trying to do something to get me the loan, but it just didn't happen. And in a way, it turned out to be a good thing, since we had to declare bankruptcy anyways about 6 months later.
I see. Interesting. Because I've heard of people that have refinanced their homes and gotten huge discounts on how much a month you pay.
Oh, yeah. So, well, when I refinanced before, I went from 8% down to 5%, and that made a couple hundred dollar a month difference.
Big time. Yeah. Really? But see, now it's 1% or 2%.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could do that. But, you know, the bankruptcy is going to be a couple of years before I'm even eligible. And by that time, if things don't change, we're not going to be Oregonians anymore.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I know you keep talking about leaving us. I'm not sure if I believe it, but we'll see. You can't get away from us. You're just...
I don't know. I had a taste of something different. For one year, I worked in a state that had the lowest unemployment in the nation, which was North Dakota. And I made the most money that I ever made in my life, driving a truck.
Yeah, you worked a little harder than you ever did in life, too, didn't you?
Well, actually, according to my back, I'm working less. I was working less up there, but I'm dragging, you know, 3-inch hoses around. The downside is I used to say, because I've been in Lane County here, Eugene area, all of my life except for that one year that I went to North Dakota. I used to say, nah, I never get cold. I didn't know what cold was.
Yeah, really.
Up there in North Dakota, if it's winter, if you spit, it's an ice cube before it hits the ground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Quite different.
It bounces.
You know, the place I was when I got the coldest in my entire life was California. It was on the beach in the Santa Barbara area, and with the wind and it was winter and everything. It was just because it was so damp, and it was just a bone-chilling cold, and I got pneumonia and spent a week in the hospital because of it. But that was way back when I was a kid, and I was in basic training in the military. So I was really sick when I went, but I was only sick for a couple of days in reality, and then I was well enough that I made the nurses all very upset because I was running around all over the place and getting in trouble.
And that hasn't changed.
True. Probably true. Yeah, every chance I get. No doubt about it.
Oh, here's a news topic for you. A while back, when we had a discussion about driving with hands-free devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, some people, they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Myself, you know, I've been using communication devices, you know, back in the CB days when I used to help with traffic control. So I'm used to talking and driving at the same time. That was a stick shift, too, if you want to, you know, talk about holding a microphone and trying to do everything. Anyway, my point is that a couple months ago, I had mentioned that once they, and this is the way the government is, once they get one law in, they always want to take it a step further.
Yeah.
Well, this is from Bloomberg, October 13th. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood is calling for an all-out ban on all communication devices, including hands-free while driving.
You know, I hate to be a spoil sport, but I'm kind of behind that. Because how would you measure, how would you decide who is complying with the law and who isn't unless you forbid all of it? And you can tell as a car goes by if a phone is being, any kind of device like that is being used. But if you just say you can use some and not others, you can't tell that. You can't tell if they're using a hands-free device or if they're just holding the thing.
Well, the thing about hands-free is that you see a bunch of people walking around talking to themselves.
Yeah, I understand that.
It's real fun.
But as a matter of fact, that for a long time bothered me.
Yeah.
But now you just expect it because...
Now if you get the phrenic, you blend right in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But... I really think, I see no reason, I'm sorry, why you have to be that available. I mean, when you're driving, if you're going from one place to another, There's no reason you have to be that available. You could just be unavailable for whatever time it is. Now, if you're a truck driver and you spend your life on the road, I realize that can be a hardship, but...
Well, even in my job, because I do pickup and deliveries, I'll get a call every once in a while from work that says, you know, can you swing over by so-and-so and pick up this, or somebody needs that from there, or whatever, and that's job-related.
But you could also, that could be done with a text or with a message. In other words, even a voice message, the phone rings and you hear it, but you can take time to pull over and listen to it.
If you're at an area that you can pull over a big vehicle, and a lot of times you can't.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's just a different situation.
I know your case because you do buy the tools. Right. You have a very good headset to do hands-free with all the time. But not everybody does that, and we can't depend on everybody doing that. And so the only way to make sure that they're not breaking the law is to make the law inclusive. I never talk to anybody in the car, even when I'm not driving. Very seldom do I ever answer the phone in the car. Of course, I very seldom answer the phone, but that's another story.
Well, the other thing that LaHood wants to do, and I'm kind of in favor of this, is that with a lot of the new gadgetry coming up, like Microsoft Sync, S-Y-N-C, devices that they have built into the dash of the car, it can be a visual distraction because to select the features you want to use, unless it's voice-controlled, you got to take your eyes off and go through menus. Include, you know, there's also some radios that are that way, too, that you have to, instead of having the simple little, you know, volume and change channel knobs and a couple preset buttons, you push the button and next thing you know, you're going through a different menu and you're changing the bass or the treble or whatever. And now your focus is on the stupid radio just trying to get the volume up. And anyway, so what he wants to do is he's calling for limited growth on vehicle features such as sync. And in a way, if it's voice controlled and it's simple and it doesn't distract you too much, I'm okay with that. But otherwise, you know, as much as I like gadgetry, I don't like to take my eyes off the road as long as, you know.
Well, I guess they're getting carried away with it. They've got televisions even in the front now, and movies and things, and it's just ridiculous. I don't see it. About the only television screen that I would want is some cars now have these rear view cameras, and that might be an acceptable thing. But I'm not even sure if I want to see those in the cars. Rear mirrors.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was following one of those SUVs that had that TV screen mounted on the roof for the kids.
Yeah.
And my attention was totally on that vehicle in front of me. I was watching their movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Following them.
Yeah, there's just too much stuff that they're doing. I like the idea of the phones being all-inclusive and doing everything, but I just don't like the idea of doing it in the car. Mm-hmm. The car is supposed to be, it gets you from point A to point B, not to live in. And now we're setting it all up so we have the opportunity of just living in the car and living in the car better than in your house. Let's put all this stuff in the house instead.
There you go. Well, let's see how your memory is working. We're at the 30 mark. What's the phone number?
Telephone number is 646-721-9887. 646-721-9887.
And I'd like to welcome one. We have a guest in the chat room.
Ah.
Unfortunately, with Blog Talk Radio being logged in as guest only, it doesn't allow you to type, which I did make the suggestion to them. Hopefully they will consider that about changing.
They in the chat room and they can't chat?
Not under a guest login, but accounts are free. You don't have to sign up to be a broadcaster, but you can just sign up for a regular account, which gives you a screen name, and you can contribute to the chats.
Yeah, do that. I mean, Ryan, I'd love to have you in the chat room if you want to talk to us, but what accomplishment does it make if you don't talk to us?
Give us a call, 646-721-9887. When you call, Blog Talk will give you a short set of instructions, and you can listen to the show, by the way, just by calling that number. And if you decide you want to participate, push the number one key on your touch-tone keypad, and a little flag will come up on my board here with your phone number, and I will go, welcome area code so-and-so, welcome to the show.
We'd love to hear from you. I mean, come on, call us. We don't get to talk to anybody. And we're being broadcast all over the world.
That's right. Believe it or not, people actually do tune in and listen.
And even if it's, well, never mind. I was going to say, even if you're in another country, go ahead and give us a call, but only if you speak English, because I don't speak any other language, so I have enough trouble getting English out.
And, another little tidbit here as I'm going through some of my notes. This would be kind of more towards people that are in computers, but recently we had a unique date. Now, this is kind of a combination of geeks and Hitchhiker's Guides to the Galaxy. We'll know this one.
Oh, 10-10-10.
Yeah, 10-10-10, because October 10, 2010, which had broken down to 10-10-10, which is the binary number of 101010, which, by the way, equals a decimal of 42, which also happens to coincide with the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything.
And, yes, in restaurant at the end of the universe, we find out that the mice are in control of the Earth, and that the answer to life, universe, and everything is 42.
You know, it just dawned on me. When you say the mice are in control.
Yeah.
You ever notice Obama's ears?
Oh, I tell you, with poor Obama. I mean, I don't look at things like that. What I do look at is the way he's trying to spend all the money he's come up with, and he doesn't mind at all printing more money in order to spend it. We're going out and asking for $2 billion right now in military aid so that we can give it to Pakistan. Now, we're going to pay that back, and we're going to give it to Pakistan. We've got to stop doing this. I mean, this just can't continue. Pakistan is maybe a good cause, but nothing is that good a cause to go out and borrow $2 billion to give it away.
Well, that's the thing, like the old rule, like you can't help somebody else if you can't help yourself. You know, same thing like with a company. The reason why a company lays you off is so the company can still be in business and hire you back later. If the company
goes
on, then the whole company may go out of business and everybody loses.
And we're liable to have that happen because, you know, there's no reason that the country has to continue on. A country can go bankrupt as well.
Is the first time in history we've ever borrowed a large sum of money from another country?
Oh, no, we've always borrowed large sums of money from other countries.
What are usually the limit?
But we usually give away more than we borrow.
Now, I'm no expert on economics. Take my situation right now. You know, we're at an all-time low as far as finances go. And I would love to be able to help somebody out. But right now, we're struggling to be able to meet our debt as it is. Now, wouldn't it be foolish of me to start handing out money right and left when I can't afford to make my own ends meet?
Well, that's sort of the point. That's why we've got to get rid of Obama because, okay, all right, here's something that I don't know if you know. I maintain that we should do a lot of cutting in how much money we spend as a country. Do you know how much money senators spend on the people who do the work? The senators don't do the work. The senators hire people who actually do all their work. Do you know how much money each senator has to spend on personnel?
No, I don't know the exact figure.
$4 million. There are 100 senators. There are $400 million they can spend. Most of them, by the way, do not. I will have to give them credit. But they're spending a couple mil anyway. But that's 100 people. So if they all spent that money, that's $400 million. That's half a billion bucks that we could make a change and, say, cut 10 or 15% on everybody. That, and House of Representatives, there are 400,000. I mean, there are 400 people in the House of Representatives, right? They have $1 million to spend on each person for their personnel. And so that's another $400 million. I mean, there's $1 billion right there in those two places that we're spending, and we're not even being told about it. I went online and looked it up the other day. And by the way, let's say a representative spends $1 million, and they all do. They are all up around the $900,000 mark. But let's say they're spending $900,000 on personnel. That doesn't count travel money or expenses. It doesn't count hiring people specifically to help with travel and on. There's a huge amount of money there that we're spending, and we don't even pay any attention to. We just say it's okay. That's the kind of things that we've got to stop doing, or at least paying attention to it, if we want to start cutting back on how much money we're spending as a country. We could, by cutting back expenses such as that, and it's not just that's just two things in the federal government. Every state government has similar situations. And if we just cut back 10% on everybody, that could make a huge, huge difference in how much money our country is spending. And there's a lot of places we could cut back and save money. And it doesn't have to be, well, I'm going to take that back. I was going to say it doesn't have to be schools. It can be schools, too, because we're spending way too much money on schools as well.
And not getting what the... See, like, when they talk about raising more money for schools, one word I want to hear is audit. But, okay, here's something, speaking of money. Okay, Obama just visited... this is pick on Obama Day, by the way. Obama just visited Portland to rally for the Democratic candidate, Gitzhammer. Now, when he visits a city, he flies down Air Force One, which his travelcade is, I'm not sure how many people it is, but they fly his limousine down in another transport, too. And then you got the expense of blocking off streets and took crowd control. Businesses, of course, some suffer because of having to close for the day. I know that he's going out and supporting the people of the same party, but is it really necessary, especially in a tight budget, to actually make an in-person visit where maybe using telepresence would be a lot cheaper?
Well, I see. Here's the thing: when the president goes someplace, they charge money for the entrance to be able to go and visit him or to have dinner with him or whatever. And they make huge amounts of money for the candidates in that particular place. The thing is, we, the taxpayer, lose because he spends that much money in order to make that much money, but the money that he makes doesn't get paid back to the taxpayer. We spend the money regardless, and the money that he makes goes to the candidate.
Uh-huh.
And so... it's a lose-lose situation. Sorry.
Well, like here is this one, because Obama went to Seattle right after this visit. The Seattle mayor, Mike McGrane, estimated the cost of providing security for the president alone was between $100,000 and $150,000.
That's right, and it was the same thing here in Portland. I mean, that's what I'm saying. We lose. We lose no matter what. And we just sit back and let it happen. We've got to start paying attention to where the money is being spent. I mean, the different candidates can talk about making money available for schools and students and such things. I would look at, again, I understand that your elementary teachers and your high school teachers are fairly frugal as far as how much money they've given. But you look at higher education, and that gets insane. All of a sudden, salaries for professors that are in higher education just goes to the absolute ridiculous. First of all, they only probably work a couple of days a week, and they're being paid $150,000 to $350,000 average, and that's way out of line. Just way out of line. We could, again, my 10% rule. They wouldn't. I mean, when you're making $300,000, 10% is not going to kill you. You can still pay your rent and all that sort of thing. But it could, when you start looking at how many people we're talking about here, because we're talking about every college in the world, well, in the United States, that makes a huge amount of money, just a huge amount of money. There are so many places that we could be cutting to save money, and police officers and school teachers are not it.
Yeah. I agree here.
See, I've got all this figured out, how we can do all of this, but we've got to change our whole system. And talking about Obama and his tax program, he's looking at a flat tax. His definition of it is a little different than mine, but he is looking at taxes. Flat tax, if we could agree on that, we would get rid of all other taxes in the United States and just do a 10% flat tax.
Yeah, but you know, taxes never go away.
What?
Taxes never go away. They always add to them.
Well, we've got to get over that effect as well. That's just us as taxpayers accepting what people are telling us. The system can be changed. It can be totally changed. And we're going to have to do it if we intend to be a country much longer, because it's going to, they're going to spend us into oblivion.
Well,
you watch it.
Something else, and I'm sorry to interrupt the something else, because I was looking for this news story. One of the things that, I don't get smoke coming out of my ears, is since you mentioned country, is how our country is changing. And I was trying to find the speech that Obama gave when he was in Portland, because one of the things he did is that he, in addition to greeting in English, he also greeted in Spanish, which is becoming the new language. And in my quick search here for that, I just found that this is released on September 21st, 2010. Obama administration released a Spanish language video showing how college is an attainable dream for Hispanics. It's a five-minute video which follows a sophomore around California State University, and it's all 100% in Spanish.
Hmm.
It's like, you know, we got this big battle going on right now about immigration and about having people assimilate, and we're complaining that the ESD programs are failing. Well, they're failing is because, like this one lady that was interviewed on 2020, she's lived in the U.S. for 14 years, can't speak a word of English, and she said she feels insulted to even try to speak English. And when asked why she doesn't, she says, I don't have to.
That's right. That's right. And you know, speaking of being insulted, I've been in several different countries outside the United States, and if you go in their country and just assume that somebody is going to be there to speak English for you, they get insulted, and they won't talk to you. If you go in and at least try to speak their language to them, almost all of the businesses especially, but just about everybody does speak English a little bit, and they won't let you off the hook. But you've got to make an effort, and these people are not making an effort.
I agree.
My grandson, I lived in Toppenish for a while, and Toppenish is I forget the exact figures, but it's like 80% Mexican, at this particular time were Spanish-speaking people. And my grandson had a friend who was 16 years old, and he was born in the United States. I mean, he was a United States citizen. He was born right in the United States. His parents did not speak English.
Uh-huh.
Did not speak English. They've lived here all this time, but they did not bother to learn English. And consequently, this kid has a real problem, because when he goes home, all the time he spends at home, he spends it in Spanish.
Right.
And so he isn't doing well in school, because he hasn't learned the English language well enough. He's pretty good. If you just go talk to him on the street, you wouldn't know that he had a problem. But when I got to sit and know this kid, I got to sit and talk to him, and he would ask me questions, because you know me, I'm very opinionated.
Yeah.
But he was asking me questions about the government, about how things have worked and where we got the money and why and all this kind of stuff, because he didn't understand it. He went through the school and he could answer the question on the test, and he didn't fail or anything, but he hadn't learned anything because he didn't understand the language. And we got down and sat down and had long talks about how our country works and why. And, of course, he was asking me, so there was some bias there, I suppose. But I think I tried to make it legit. And he was really quite interested, but had never been allowed or never had the chance to find out about it. I was totally blown away by the fact that this kid had lived here 16 years and didn't know what's going on.
Now, how well could he speak English?
He spoke English very well, but only conversation English. He didn't. A lot of the phrases and things that when you hear somebody talk, you hear them mention something, but unless you know what it is, you just let it go.
Parents, basically.
Well, not even that.
Like when a friend of mine went to that one term at Lane Community College, I'll say it again, Lane Community College. Well, I wasted $33,000 there and got a degree to become a truck driver. She tried to take a Spanish class, which also didn't teach the Spanish that they use around here. And at midterm, the instructor says, I have to tell you guys this, but as a class, you guys are failing. And she said, well, that's because we don't... Well, let me backstep for a second. After the second week, they full immersed, no English is allowed in the class. By midterm, they basically just said, we don't know what the hell we're saying. All we're doing is repeating words you're throwing at us. We don't know what they mean. We don't know how they use it. I tried using this. One student said, I tried using this at a Mexican restaurant and pissed off the person behind the counter.
Yeah.
I don't know what I said, but I made her mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's bad, because you don't get your food.
and the other thing, too, is that, I mean, I've got some friends that, you know, are from Mexico. You know, Spanish is their first language. They're here legally. And I asked one of them if he could help my friend with her homework. And he looked at that homework and goes, I have no idea what they're trying to say here. And he said, and he told me that his brother took the same class hoping for an easy A and failed it.
Yeah. That's another story entirely, that we need to start to looking at our educational system, because they keep changing things and for no reason whatsoever. Look at math that they're teaching to fifth graders. I mean, you can't understand what they're talking about, and you can't help the kids with it because it makes no sense to adults. I mean, they don't do their things the way they used to, and there's no reason not to.
No. In fact, let me just read a post here that on this article that I was just commenting from. This is off of the CNSNews.com. One of the commenters said that, what the recruiting Spanish-speaking students to attend college is like giving pre-med courses to kindergarten students. Neither group can grasp the true meaning.
That's it. And it's nobody's, well, it is somebody's fault, but the kids, in this particular case with Lewis, he spoke English, and that was no problem. But he spoke colloquial English, and so you go in and start talking to him about something in the government or something of any consequence, and he doesn't know what you're talking about. He doesn't know what the words actually even mean. So he and fortunately with me, he felt comfortable enough to ask. You know, what are you talking about? What does that mean? And so he spoke, as I say, colloquial English, small words, easy words, words of the day, so to speak,
right.
but not words that can teach you anything about our country.
And that's what my bitch meant. Oh. We have 9 minutes left in the program,
643-1987.
If you'd like to call and join in about this or any other topic that's on your mind, it's pretty much an open forum today. In case you haven't figured that out already. But no, that's one of my bitch and moans. I mean, if you're especially a foreign language student, if they come over here at an early age, they say they can teach you the basic understanding of the language within a year or two. And personally, I think that's the way it should be, is that so the kids can thrive in our country, they need to speak the language. But what we're doing, like in Astoria, Oregon, for example, as of this year, from first grade to 12th, they're making it mandatory for children to speak Spanish, to be bilingual in both English and Spanish. So instead of, these people are coming over here, and the children are the victims, in my opinion, because they didn't have a choice. They got drug over here, and okay, they're here. But teach them English, because still the majority of the population is English. And
I know about that.
Well, at least in this realm. I'm not going to learn Spanish. I'm sorry. I'm fighting that.
I wish I could. I'm not very good at learning languages at all, and I wish I could learn Spanish. It would open a lot of doors, I feel. But I don't, so consequently, and I'm fairly good with English. I usually understand most, even quite a few big words, Whoopi. But and that's my kids. I had foster kids, and again, some of the English American foster kids don't really know the English language that well as well. I always caught myself. With the kids, I'd tell them something and say, what does that mean? And so I found myself explaining everything. But it makes a big difference when you just even doing that with the kid and explaining what it means when you talk, when you speak in an actual setting or an actual, what do I want to say, when you're actually using it in a necessary space. That they remember it better then than they do if you just try to teach them words.
Well, yeah.
And so, and consequently, a couple of my kids became quite verbose, or became quite capable of talking and understanding what's going on, even just in the little time that I spent with them, the 3 or 4 years as a foster kid, because I refused to lower my English to their level. I spoke in mine, and I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say I refused to do it. The kids were actually more than ready to learn.
Oh yeah, kids. In my opinion, and I'm going to base this on my own experience, because I can remember at 4 or 5 years old, I was very interested in how electricity worked, taking stuff apart, fixing things, and just, you know, very inquisitive. I had a 16-volume encyclopedia I loved going through, but for somebody that age, well, no, you're not supposed to be interested in that. You're supposed to be interested in dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And so during and I think it's like second grade, third grade, something like that, and, and as you go through school, they dumb you down.
Yeah.
And my parents didn't recognize or didn't want to follow through on the fact that, hey, you know, I have a natural talent for this, and so that was never encouraged or supported.
Yeah, that's too bad too. But and parents need to take up the parenting role. Too many parents just let it go and figure the school can take care of everything. And that's really sad because the school doesn't take care of everything. They take care of only the things that they're interested in, and that doesn't mean that that is your opinion or your idea or anything else. If you want your kids to grow up a specific way, you have to teach them.
I agree. I mean, but you look at the families nowadays. Like my friend I was talking about earlier, she's divorced. You know, she's trying to raise her daughter on her own. She did a lot of the electronic babysitter stuff. You know, and they, in between, because she's going to college herself and trying to work part-time, like a lot of families anymore, it takes two people just to pay the bills. You don't have time to really sit down with your kid like they used to back when we were growing up. And, you know, there actually was, you know, mother, father, and people sat down at the dinner table to eat. At a dinner table, come to think of it.
That's interesting. That is interesting because an awful lot of families don't have dinner tables. They sit down with a plate on their lap in front of the television or in front of the computer or whatever, and that's a problem. The computer, in a way, is actually helpful because you can learn a lot of things in the computer, but you do have to have, you do have to have an adult parent to even encourage you to look things up. Otherwise, you just look up games and stuff like that. But I always used, well, even before computers, I bought a set of encyclopedias. And I was one of these weird people that would say something and the kid asks, what does that mean? And you walk over and hand them the C encyclopedia or something, you know, look it up.
Yeah.
And it teaches them a lot more than if you tell them what it's supposed to mean, because the encyclopedia is more thorough.
And once you get that inquisitive mind going, like what I was as a child, it's a benefit. I mean, that's part of my skills today. Before Lane ruined my career as a technician, you know, why I could walk in from being a VCR technician to repairing robotic vehicles. In fact, and I still don't believe it, where you used to work at K&D, you said you had two companies that couldn't get that network going?
Oh, you're talking about the automation?
Well, not the automation, but to connect, to get the internet working and all the computers.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, we had two officially professional organizations come in and try to hook up our in-house network. Neither one of them could get it done right. And Robin came in and had it done in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And understood what was wrong. It was just so ridiculous.
And for me, it was no big deal. It's just what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that got to me is she recognized the fact that there was something wrong with a piece of equipment. And it was a brand new piece of equipment that I bought to put in there. And it was a switcher, and some of the ports didn't work. Brand new, and they didn't work. And so she recognized it immediately.
Yeah.
It was,
the other companies, they strung the cabling and everything to try to get
it. Oh, yeah. Everything. It was just insane. Just insane. They would never believe that the piece of equipment didn't work. But
some people have a natural ability. But anyway, this is all the time we got that hour has as usual. If this time slot works for you, or if you have a suggestion, please send us an email, talk@krbs.com. On what time you usually listen or would like to participate, and that'll help us with our schedule. But for now, we'll kind of stay at this time, Friday.
10 o'clock on Friday.
10 o'clock on Friday, yep.
Same time, different day.
And different topic. Again, thank you for our guest. So.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.